Welcome back to Banterbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week, we will be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week, we watched Cloud Atlas. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey, everyone. It's Samuel.
Ew.
Oh, my God.
He's trying to sound as gross as he sounded on the last episode.
Hello, everybody. It's Russell. We are all in our official Mad Artist Panda costumes, and we're so excited to be here.
Yes. Those things we have.
What's up, everybody? It's Panda Tyler coming at you live from the couch.
Next to me.
Next to Russell, as always.
Hi, it's me. I'm John Panda.
Oh, he's already practicing.
Are you doing the Pauly Shore impression?
No.
Tybalt! I'm going to be a real boy!
Oh my God, this is...
It's me, John Panda!
Oh
this
my God.
This is going to be exhausting.
Yeah,
So, Tyler, you had seen this before. Had any of the rest of y'all seen this before?
I had neither seen it nor heard of it.
Seen what, Danielle?
I already said the name of the movie.
You did?
Yes.
No. Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear her say it. I'm
You're doing great.
I know it's my first time seeing it.
Never seen it, never heard of it.
I had heard of it for a long time. Everyone had been like, oh, you're a huge Tom Hanks fan. You got to watch Cloud Atlas. And I was just like, okay. And then just never did, you know, like I do with things.
Right.
But I had heard of it for a long time. And people had said either that it was terrible or that it was really good. And so I was just like, all right, I don't really know what I'm in for, but cool.
I'm fascinated to see everybody's thoughts on it because I have a hot take. But I don't want to say it unless everybody's on the same page.
How were you exposed to it, Tyler?
Honest
since you were the only one who'd already seen it.
Honest to God, I was literally just flipping through shows and went to HBO, like when we got HBO access, and kind of my dad was showing me things like The Newsroom and like a bunch of these highbrow things that I thought I was so freaking smart when I was like 14, 15 years old. And so I'm like, yeah, I understand all this highbrow comedy, even though I kind of didn't. And Cloud Atlas was on, and it looked kind of cool. So I was like, you know what? Yeah, sure, we'll give it a watch. And it just blew my freaking mind, man. And every time I've seen it, it's just been the biggest roller coaster of emotions. It's so powerful. It's so poignant. It's so good. And it was just something that I just saw on a whim. And I'm better for it, man. I love this movie a lot.
Well, this movie came out in 2012. It was directed by Tom. I don't know how to say his name. It's either Tykwer or Tykwer.
I'm gonna go with Tykwer.
Okay, and then Lana and Lily Wachowski, and was written by all three of them, and based on the novel by David Mitchell. Mm-hmm. It stars Tom Hanks as several characters and Halle Berry also as several characters. You can buy or rent it on Vudu, Apple TV, YouTube, Prime Video, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, an exploration of how the actions of individual lives impact one another in the past, present, and future, as one soul is shaped from a killer into a hero, and an act of kindness ripples across centuries to inspire a revolution. Samuel.
All right, so the Wachowskis, or Wachowskis, however you say it.
I don't know. I just guessed.
I'm going to go with Wachowskis.
Okay.
Who directed the very first story, so the one on the boat, the one set in the 1800s, and then the two future storylines. Mm-hmm. They are obviously most famous for directing and creating the Matrix films.
Mm-hmm.
That's their big claim to fame. And then their other films are Bound, which was their first film, Speed Racer, and Jupiter Ascending.
Speed Racer.
They did Jupiter Ascending?
Yep.
I didn't see it, but I saw a lot of stuff about it. Yep. That makes sense.
Tom Tykwer directed the 1930s segment, the 1970s segment, and the 2012 segment. I've never heard of a single movie he's ever done. So
okay.
Let's see if any of y'all have.
Okay.
Deadly Maria.
Nope.
Winter Sleepers.
The Winter Sleepers.
Run Lola Run. The Princess and the Warrior. And Heaven.
No, I've never heard of any of those.
I think I might have heard of Heaven. But I feel like the name is so, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
I feel like the name is so general, it almost like could almost accidentally just be me assuming.
Just like, oh yeah, I've heard of Heaven. You know that place?
I've heard of Heaven. You ever heard of Heaven? Yeah, that Jesus Christ fella. I know him.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
So actually, before we get in the weeds with this movie, I wanted to read off a couple of thoughts from our good friend of the podcast, Rick, that he sent in about Independence Day.
He'll be back soon, boys.
He will. We're gonna take a little break from our Star Wars series because we want him to be back from vacation for the last episode. So for the next 2 weeks, we'll be doing just, you know, normal hat picks as usual. So the one thing that he threw out and wanted to share with us was that in the original ending of Independence Day, Russell, the character that, you know, flies into the thing, Glorious Purpose style.
What? That was me?
Yeah. He was actually not allowed to fly. He was not allowed to be one of the people. However, he arrives at the end of the battle flying his crop duster, which he has been towing behind his motorhome, with a missile strapped to its wing and flying it into the City Destroyer's weapon.
That was in the original?
That was the original, but then Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin scrapped it because they didn't think it would be believable.
That was a good idea.
That was a good idea.
That's so stupid. Oh my god.
It's hilarious. I love the idea of him just like in the crop duster. Hello, boys.
Just like this missile strapped to one of the wings, god, and he's just like, so I got cool. It.
Like, hey, I'm back.
Oh my gosh!
Oh, it was home. Dang it! I said home.
That's no, he said something like "Fellas, I'm back" or something like that was the last line.
Oh yeah, because they abducted him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah. So do y'all? I know you do. So I'm giving you the opening now. What do y'all want to talk about before we get into this plot? Because the way that the plot goes is essentially each little chunk just tells us the whole story of one, like, one time period's plot line. So that's kind of how I'm, because it wouldn't make sense to jump back and forth. So yes. I'm just going to be going like over here is this,
really,
and then like
to understand like some of what's going on.
So overarching thoughts: this movie is. In my opinion, amazing, specifically because it just really showcases the interconnectivity between people, and I really like how it, like, transcends, like, space and time, and it's just all that wacky philosophical spiritual stuff that you know.
I was like, this was literally just like what Tyler told us the other day that he fully believes is that like I was watching it and I was like, this is straight up just like what's already what he already believes. No wonder he loves this movie so much.
Tyler goes to the Church of Cloud Atlas.
It is the perfect Tyler Webster movie in the sense that it's got the spiritual stuff, but it also has it has all of the best aspects of all of the best types of movies, right? You've got boats on the water, you got awesome neo-future fight scenes with lasers and sorry. Anyway.
Tyler always making our lives hard.
It's got like cool tribalistic stuff. It's just so good. One of the biggest criticisms that people will say about this, and I want this to be
that was pretty cringe.
That was a little okay.
It was pretty cringe.
It was very cringe.
I understand why they did it.
They could have just not, and it would have had the same. It wouldn't have mattered. They could have just been white guys, and I would have been like, cool.
Awesome.
That makes sense.
Here's the thing. When you watch any kind of content from the directors talking about this movie, you can tell that they are really in their heads about the spiritualism and the symbolism about what they're putting on, right? The whole focus of the movie, according to the directors, from what I have seen, is about the interconnectedness and blurring the lines that we think divide us from one another.
And I understand the idea of, you know, for people who believe in, like, you know, the reincarnation of a soul being able to come back and just, mm-hmm. like, be a different person, and, like, you could come back as someone of a different race. I understand that. It's still really cringe to put a white person in, like, Asian face, and that's real cringe.
With the Asian girl.
I know they did. That's also cringe. And I was like, okay, like, I kind of feel like this could have been a little, mm-hmm. like... Because I noticed that she was also, like, put in whiteface, and I was like, this just seems like it's towing an uncomfortable line,
yeah.
and that didn't need to happen. It could have just been, like, just white people, and it, like, you know, switching over there, because most of the cast was white aside from like maybe three characters. And so like it could have just been swap over there, and like they're just white in the Neo future, and that's not like a problem, because there were other people that were like just like normal white people. I was like, they didn't have to make these people like, you know, put on Asian face. That seemed weird to me.
I'm not a person of color, so my optics on how this type of quote unquote representation, I'm unaware as to how that would affect somebody who looks like the people that they were portraying. But from my myopic viewpoint, I think it helped solidify the point that because they, I mean, they even did it, like, they didn't do it, but they mentioned with the whole slavery thing at the end of the Mr. Ewing's journey across the sea. He's just like, I was in the slave trade business. I was my life was saved by a freed slave. I understand now that this is stupid. And everybody, it's this moment of everybody realizing that no matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like, this idea that we are different is just stupid. And that commentary, I think, is further solidified by having people play different races. But I can understand how somebody who is a person of color would see that and get offended by it. I'm not saying that the criticism is inherently wrong. I just don't particularly agree that it compromises the movie.
Here is my counter thing to that. Because the facial restructuring on some of the actors was, in the first part, some of it was not done very well and didn't look very good.
No, I was looking at it and I was just like, come on, y'all.
And
like,
then, but even the stuff that did look good is still just like, if they had taken this same idea, this same movie, something like this, and made it into like an animated epic, and then all of like the voices like were the same, mm-hmm. like across like the stories, that would have been like the kind of way to try to do that without, yeah. you know, just casting other actors, right?
Yeah.
But then it gets into, you know, then you kind of lose the message because then it's so many different people and, you know, so well, I understand.
Well, not only that too, but you also have the idea that, you know, okay, so you get the voices, but like, but the actor who's playing that voice isn't a certain color. You know what I mean? And so it starts to kind of just really go down that rabbit hole of what you can and cannot do. I don't know. This is definitely a much larger topic for a much different time. But in regards to this movie specifically, could it have been done differently? Yes. Could it have been done better? Probably. I think, but for what we've got, the focus isn't on the whitewashing per se. The focus is on kind of dissolving those barriers. And that was what I took away from it, at least.
Well, I personally would prefer to just leave that topic there, because as none of us are people of color, we have no clue
yeah.
what the actual reception to this is. Like, you know, I would honestly love if somebody would, like, you know, like shoot us an email or message us and give us your thoughts. Like,
oh my God,
if you are a person of color and you've watched this movie and you saw, like, you know, them putting, I mean, they put Halle Berry in as like, you know, a Jewish person. They put the girl who played Sonmi 451 in as, you know, a white girl. And then they put a bunch of white people as, you know, Asian people. Like, mm-hmm. you know, watching that movie, how did you feel like, you know, watching that? Because because our perspective, we can't really, like, get a good view on it. But, like, yeah, I would love to actually hear from, you know, someone who, you know, may have been offended, or maybe they were fine with it. Maybe they understood it the way that you do, Tyler.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, so I'd kind of like to just leave that topic there, because I don't think we can really talk about it.
Sure.
The thing I wanted to say that I was talking to Samuel about this last night.
Oh, God.
I so wish we hadn't done a watch party. Y'all absolutely destroyed my experience with this movie. Y'all would not stop talking through the entire thing. And I was so tired. Like, yeah, like I had not gotten enough sleep. I had to get up at 6 a.m., as you guys know,
yeah.
and I did not get a chance to go take a nap. So all of my energy was going into keeping up with the movie, and y'all are just talking constantly and like making little jokes and doing all this stuff. And I was just like, I am gonna kill everybody in this room.
It was very hard to keep up with what was going on with the environment.
Why like didn't you guys say something? I wish I would have just watched it with just Samuel because I was losing my mind and like.
Well, yeah. But that's the thing though. The movie was almost 3 hours long. Why didn't you guys say anything?
Yeah, the movie.
You
could have
just
said,
"Dude, guys, I was all of my energy." I just said it was going into keeping up with the movie. I didn't have any energy to like give anything to anyone. You notice I spoke to no one during and after because all of my energy was zapped. I had nothing left. I was like struggling to stay awake and I was like, I have to just watch it. I have to focus. Like, you know, if I had put any effort into trying to get you guys to shut up, I would have suddenly not been paying attention to the movie and all my focus would have been elsewhere and I would have missed things. But yeah, that was what I wanted to say is that I was like, dude, I just like, I wish I'd just watched this movie with just Samuel because it was so like, the experience was just like so ruined for me. It was not a great experience, not a good movie to watch with people talking because I was just like, I can't keep up with what's happening. There's one storyline, I don't know what they were doing. I was, every time it flipped, I was just like, I don't know what's going on. Like, yeah. I have no clue. And Sam doesn't either. Samuel also doesn't know. It's okay. I'm not trying to make y'all feel terrible, but I'm just like, bro, like with a movie like this, where it is so complex, we cannot be talking through it. If we're going to have a watch party, it's gotta be silent. Like I can't, it was driving me up the wall. As soon as it was done, I stood there for 5 minutes and then I was like, great, bedtime. Cause I was just like I have no social left. Nothing is left. Everything has been given to the movie. That is it.
The movie absorbed my soul.
The movie absorbed my soul, and I have nothing left to give. But yeah, that's all I wanted to say that was a separate topic, is that if we do a movie like this again that is this complex, everyone gotta shut up. Everyone has to be quiet. I can't. It was too much. Anyway, other people can say their thoughts now.
John, what do you think about it?
It was definitely a lot to digest. It kind of started to make more sense to me a little halfway through the film.
Well, I think that's kind of... That's like the intended...
It eventually kind of starts to click. But overall, I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it. I kept tabs on all the plot lines pretty okay. It was just... The jumps were jarring. Which, you know, that's the way it is. But it... I don't know. For the jump cuts... They were well-timed enough, but it led to a certain level of engagement that was actually really well done. It kept me, like, on my toes. It wasn't, like, just drowning in, like, one storyline. The hop kind of kept me constantly, like, on my proverbial feet, as you will.
Well, they did it... Sorry, I was just going to say, I mean, this is based on a novel, and they did it the way that... In my opinion, the best writers write different, like, perspectives of a story or different stories where exactly they get to the end of a chapter and they leave you where either something crazy just happened or it's about to happen. And then, oh, another perspective. And, like, and you have to read through their perspective and you're just dying to get back to the other one. But then something crazy happens at the end of that perspective. Yeah. Oh, but now you get to go back to the thing you wanted to read.
Right.
And, like, it keeps you, like, constantly wanting to continue and being like, well, what happens next? And, like, you know, flipping the page.
Yeah, it's like book crack.
Yes, exactly. Where, like,
gives you just enough.
Where you're like, I'm just going to finish this chapter. Yeah. And then the end, like, ends with someone just, like, you know, secret stabbing someone. And you're like, what? I have to keep going now. Like, you know, and you just keep flipping. It's like, yeah, I thought that was really, really well done because it kept, I had to pee so bad while we were watching this movie. And like, and I realized after a certain point, we were only like 2/3 of the way through. And like, I was like, it was bad. And I was like, you're but like if I dying. Get up, I'm already having trouble keeping up. And so I just like ran to the bathroom and peed as fast as I could and ran back and was like, I know I missed something, but let me see if I can pick back up.
It's just because like it feels so like long. Like, so then like pausing it becomes almost like not the goal, you know? Yeah. Like if you pause it, like you're like, you take yourself out of it and like you're wasting time. It's like, it's a whole,
I definitely didn't want people to pause it because I was like, it's just going to like ruin the flow and not be good. There were so many places, there were at least two other places where I thought the movie was ending. Like big moments where like, you know, Sonmi is like speaking over like, you know, something big and like something crazy is happening or like, you know, or like Frobisher is speaking over and narrating and I'm like, oh, well, there's the end, like that inspirational thing. Nope. Here's another 45 minutes
now
of
movie.
Now we
got more stuff to say.
And I was just like, oh, okay, so that's not the end? Yeah, I gotta go pee now. Like,
man.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they psych you out with it. No, this is arguably like... So one of my favorite books is A Visit from the Goon Squad, and it's very similar to this movie in the sense that it tells... So the way that each like chapter is essentially a different story, and like it can be argued that it's just a collection of short stories,
yeah.
But they're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
Usually by like one small character that was in the previous chapter, you now like expand in on their life, like, you know, years in the future or something.
Yeah.
And like even each chapter might be in a different format. Like there's one whole chapter about like a girl who I don't know if she just like is fat, like I don't really remember, but she is fascinated with, nice.
Right.
She is fascinated with like, you know, PowerPoint and like creating like graphics and presentations. And so the whole chapter is like each page is a new slide, but it's talking about like what she's experiencing in her home.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
And,
it's like a different framing device.
Right. Yeah. But like it goes through all these crazy scenarios. Like, you know, it'll be, you know, something pretty relatable, and then it'll suddenly be like, you know, they're over in Africa, like on a safari, and someone dies, and it's like crazy. And so it jumps all over the place like that, and at the end, like a bunch of the characters end up being in the same place. I think they're at like the Olympics or something. And they like, you know, kind of realize that they have connections. So watching this, I kept thinking of that book because it reminded me so much of it, of just like the ties between, you know, people that you don't even realize are there. No, but this is like one of my favorite kinds of stories, or one of my favorite kinds of like just artwork to take in, is like stuff that's connected but separate.
And it's definitely something that it rewards multiple rewatches because you mm-hmm. pick up a lot more. Like it's very overwhelming on the first watch, and I think that's kind of by design,
mm-hmm.
because when you once you watch it the first time and you go, okay, I kind of get it, and then you rewatch it again, you're like, oh my god, that makes so much more sense now, because you've adjusted to the pacing, you know what to expect, you understand the broad strokes as to what all is going on, and now that the initial shock of the style in the way in which this movie was presented is kind of gone, now that shock is no longer there, you're able to really start to see not to say that you can't see it beforehand, but the symbolism and different things and actions and things that they do to help drive home the certain points that they're trying to make are way more clear and tangible.
Yeah.
And it's just like, the first time I watched it, I'm like, what in the heck did I just watch? I just know I enjoyed it. The second time, it's just like, oh, I understand. This is what's happening. And then the third time, I'm like, my mind has expanded. My consciousness has evolved. We are all one. Oh, my goodness. I need to go meditate. Like, that was the experience, kind of like the journey for me. But it's extremely overwhelming.
You owe it all to Natalie Portman, apparently. It was something I didn't write down, but she's the reason essentially that this movie became a thing, because she read the book and showed it to, I don't remember which one, but one of the Wachowskis, and gave it to them and was like, hey, you know, this is like really good, and I think it could make for a really good movie. And then they, like the siblings became just like obsessed with it. And then they brought, you know, Tom Tykwer on board, and like from then, like that was it. They originally had planned for Natalie Portman to be Sonmi, but that ended up not happening. I think it was because she had something else going on, but I don't remember. But they did give her like a special like thanks in the end credits for being
really?
Literally the reason that the movie exists.
That's so cool.
Right. Yeah,
my girl,
Emily Portland, as Candace likes to call her.
no kidding.
Yeah, you owe it all to her.
Huh.
Thanks, Natalie.
And this
we
is
appreciate you.
And like Tom Hanks is like. Absolutely, he was essentially the reason all the actors like got on board as fast as they did, because he was immediately on board. He was the first one to fly out to Berlin and like, you know, start shooting.
Really?
And like doing rehearsals and stuff. And once they were all like, "Oh, Tom Hanks is on board. Well, I guess we're on board," and just like all went over there.
That's the other interesting thing about this movie I saw when I was doing my research is it's called like the first German blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's one of the first big movies that was exclusively like filmed and produced in Germany.
Really?
So they have like big fondness for this movie over there.
They tried to get Warner Brothers to produce it, and then Warner Brothers said, "No, And
this is an indie film, technically.
Because it's an indie film, and they were like, we're not producing that. And so they had to go to a bunch of different, like, German companies who ended up donating, like, pretty much all of the budget.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Aside from $7 million that came directly from the Wachowskis.
That's crazy, man.
But, yeah, I can go ahead and jump into the plot if y'all don't have any other thoughts that you want to talk about right now.
I think everything else that we have to say that we can get to based on what's happening. Cool. Based on the plot.
The story jumps between eras until each storyline eventually resolves, spanning hundreds of years. Writing from characters in prior storylines are found in future storylines. Characters appear to recur in each era, but change relationships to each other. Slaves or abusers often change roles, suggesting reincarnation or other connection between souls through the ages. So, in the Chatham Islands, 1849, American lawyer Adam Ewing witnesses the whipping of Atua, an enslaved Moriari man. Atua stows away on Ewing's ship and persuades him to advocate for Atua to join the crew as a free man. Atua saves Ewing's life before his doctor, Henry Goose, can poison him and steal his gold under the guise of treating him for a parasitic worm. In San Francisco, Ewing and his wife denounce her father's complicity in slavery and leave to join the abolition movement.
I will say that's one of the few things I got immediately. As soon as he was like, oh yeah, it's a worm. It's definitely a worm. As soon as he said it, I was all like, okay, this doctor's sus.
Yeah, and the way there's...
I didn't catch it for a long time. Not until the narrator said, didn't even realize that he was being poisoned. I was like, he's being poisoned? Like, I didn't catch on at all.
Because that's the cool thing with the interconnectedness is that Halle Berry's character was reading the journals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I can't believe he hasn't even put it together yet. And it's like, wow, wait, I didn't put that together. What?
No.
And that's
No, Halle Berry is reading the letters.
Frobisher was reading
the journal.
You're right. Because he was looking for the other side of the other page of the journal.
Yeah.
You're right. But Frobisher is just like, oh my God, I can't believe he hasn't even realized that he's being poisoned yet. And I think that was the big, like, confirmation. Like, in cinema, there's like a certain language that you speak in terms of how the character is portrayed, their actions that they take, the shots that they're in when they're the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
right? It creates this sinister air around someone, even if they're not doing anything bad, to kind of subtly telegraph it. But it's not always very obvious.
Yeah.
And it's freaking... Why do I keep wanting to call him Hugh Jackman? He's not Hugh Jackman. And Tom Hanks. No.
Tom Hanks.
I don't know why I keep calling him Hugh Jackman in my head. Anyway, it's Tom Hanks, and everybody loves Tom Hanks. He can't be the bad guy, but at the same time, he's being framed as this, like, sinister guy. So it's like, I don't know about this guy, but he's saying there's a worm. I believe him when he says there's a worm. They're like, no, he's poisoning him. He's a bad guy, and then it's the whole the bomb under the table theory,
mm-hmm.
right? My brain's not working today. Who's the guy who did Psycho?
Oh,
Hitchcock.
Yeah. Thank you. Hitchcock's bomb theory, for those who don't know, is this concept that the best way to create suspense is to have an issue where nobody knows that there's the issue, but the audience is the only people who know.
Yeah, dramatic irony.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if we're all sitting here and the listeners at home are just hearing us talk, and then the audio cuts out because a bomb goes off and it kills all of us, that's a shock. That scares everybody, but that's it. But if we're talking and then the camera pans down and sees the bomb ticking away 5 minutes left until it goes off, that's what creates the suspense. And this movie does a really good job of doing that in multiple scenes, because now we know Man-Man's poisoning him. And so we're starting to get really nervous as this guy's starting to cling on to life. And then you have other things like the Halle Berry scene in the Halle Berry sequence where the Hugo Weaving character, the assassin,
mm-hmm.
you see him in the house, but the guy doesn't see him. Like, you see him slip in, and you're just like, oh, God, he doesn't see him. He doesn't see him. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I'm losing my mind. And then, of course, he shoots him. It's terrifying. Movie good.
Well, moving to one of my favorite lines. In 1936, English composer Robert Frobisher finds his work as an amanuensis to aging composer Vivian Ayres, allowing Frobisher to compose his own masterpiece, The Cloud Atlas Sextet. Frobisher reads from Ewing's journal among the books at Ayres' mansion. Ayres demands credit for the sextet and threatens to expose Frobisher's bisexuality if he refuses. Frobisher shoots and wounds Ayres and goes into hiding. He finishes the sextet and shoots himself before his lover Rufus Sixsmith arrives. That was one of my, like, I would say three favorite plot lines was that one.
Yeah, that one was really good.
I also just, like, I don't know, man. I'm a little bit of a sucker for anything having to do with like composers. Movies like, oh gosh, Holland's Opus.
I know of it, but I don't.
Maybe it was Mr. Holland's Opus, or something like that. Yeah. I saw it a long time ago and I watched it several times because it's another one just like about composers. But like I just love that like whole, I guess, just vibe of like of all of that. I can't even really explain it. But like every time we flip back to that plot line, it was just like, ah, I'm comfortable here. Like
that and Frobisher, the actor who plays Frobisher is just very charming and charismatic. Mm-hmm. And you really are just invested in the play.
You're rooting for him.
Yeah, yeah. You're rooting for him because he's this gay guy in a time where it's super not okay to be that. Yeah. And the composer that he's working under is incredibly talented, but a bit of a jerk, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying so hard, man. let me tell you why it's starting to creep in.
But yeah, so in San Francisco, 1973, this is the one I'm going to need to read because I did not understand what was happening in this plot line whatsoever.
I never got the most confusing.
Yeah, I never got, like, fully understood what happened.
So let's find out, shall we? So journalist Louisa Ray meets Sixsmith, now a nuclear physicist. Sixsmith tips off Ray to a conspiracy to create a catastrophe at a nuclear reactor run by Lloyd Hooks, who secretly promotes oil energy interests. He is killed by Hooks's hitman, Bill Smoke, before he can give her a report as proof. Ray finds Frobisher's letters to Sixsmith, just as Frobisher had found Ewing's journal earlier. She tracks down Frobisher's obscure sextet in a record store. Scientist Isaac Sachs passes her a copy of Sixsmith's report. Smoke kills Sachs by blowing up his plane and then runs Ray's car off a bridge, destroying the report. With help from the plant's head of security, Joe Napier, Ray evades another assassination attempt and Smoke is killed. With a copy of the report from Sixsmith's niece, she exposes the plot and has Hooks indicted. Okay, so it was essentially that this guy wanted oil to stay as like the big fuel thing and keep nuclear energy out of it. And so he was like, if we just explode the thing and have this big accident happen, then like, there we go.
Yeah, so what
What
I somehow missed was the fact that he was... with why they were trying to create the meltdown.
Yeah.
I missed that. And then I missed I missed the fact that he was a nuclear scientist. I don't know how I missed
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I missed that
but
too.
But I missed that as well.
Yeah, I missed lots of things.
Because I was like, what does Sixsmith have to do with any of this? Like, why does he know all of this?
He's also the only character to be in two different plot lines. Yeah. Like, to actually appear in two different plot lines, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah,
James Darcy.
Yeah, Sixsmith is the only one to play the same character in two different plot lines.
I thought it was like his ancestor.
No,
that's him.
Same character.
No, it's the same man.
Really?
Yeah. He's the young lover of Frobisher.
No kidding.
No one who finds the body, yeah.
Ain't that something?
Because it was only not even 40 years apart.
Yeah.
Those two plot lines. Because 1936, 1973, it was the same guy.
That's right, because it happened during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. That's really cool. Okay. Yeah. See? Watch it and things happen. Isn't that crazy?
Well, this was another one of my favorites. In London 2012, gangster Dermot Hoggins murders a critic after a harsh review of his memoir, generating huge sales. That scene was so crazy.
This felt like insane.
This felt like the most different of all of the... story.
But I loved it.
This entire little plot line is my number one favorite plot line in the entire
book. Oh, really?
It is the funniest and the most, like, every time it flipped back, I was like,
yes!
It's
like, what's happening now?
I'm like, it's fine.
No, it's okay, it's okay. So Hoggins' brothers threaten the publisher, the aging Timothy Cavendish, for Hoggins' profits. Timothy's brother, Denholm, tells him to hide at Aurora House. On the way, Timothy reads a manuscript based on Ray's story. Believing Aurora House is a hotel, Timothy signs in, only to discover he has unwittingly committed himself to a nursing home where all outside contact is prohibited. Denholm, Denholm reveals that he sent Timothy there as revenge for an affair with his wife. Timothy escapes with three other residents, resumes his relationship with an old flame, and writes a screenplay about his experience.
It would just be a great... It would be a great concept for, like, just a comedy film.
Oh, it would be so good. I want to watch that movie where Tom Hanks is, like, playing him. Yes. I want to watch that movie
but
so
that's why
bad.
I love this. That's why this movie is... Okay. That's why this movie is so good, because it's everything, man. You have all these different storylines and all these different genres blending together into this amazing, like, amalgamation of things. This was so funny. Like, this whole bit... Because originally...
I love the bit where, like, they're like, oh, no, Mr. Meeks does want to come. And they're, like, deciding. And they're like, you know what? Yeah, we're turning around.
Mr. Meeks. All for one. And then they just...
And drives over the grass.
They floor it in the direction of the four people chasing them.
And when they're coming back, the guy just dives out of the way. They crash through the gate. And it's just these four, like, old people, like, yeah!
And then they go to the pub.
Yes!
And
they're,
like, 4 miles down the pub.
Down the road.
They didn't drive far at all in a very recognizable vehicle.
Right.
And then they just park and are, like, shocked that they followed them.
I was like, oh, no. And then
Mr. Meeks came in.
He comes in clutch.
It was also...
Oh, no, two Scotsmen among you! I was just like, yes!
It was so good! Oh my gosh, it was amazing. Also, it was definitely, whoever was asking last night, it was definitely brain matter when they smashed Nurse over the head. I mean, did you see it? That was not wine. That was, like, pink.
I thought it was like a wine barrel.
Yes, it might have been a wine barrel, but whatever came out of it, like, wine, if it's in a barrel... I don't know about that. It looked like straight up they just like bashed her head in.
Well, I gotta look at it after.
Yeah, look
at her name, Mrs.
It was Nurse Noakes.
Noakes. First of all, Hugo Weaving playing Nurse Noakes
was
so
good. Oh my gosh.
Are you kidding me?
He's so tall.
He's such an intimidating presence in every scene he's in, and now he's playing this scary nurse.
Oh my gosh, it was so good.
He goes up and just
good.
Slaps the guy in the face.
Hugo Weaving, I think, honestly, is this movie's representation of the devil because he never has a good storyline.
No.
Not once.
Because didn't he also...
He is this movie's representation of pure incarnate evil.
Well, because I'm pretty sure he was Georgie.
He was.
Yeah, he was. He played Georgie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he was straight up the devil.
Yeah.
It was wine. Yeah, it was
Are
wine.
You sure it was
yeah.
wine?
Yeah.
It looked like they
According
just smashed
to the
her head
Cloud
in.
Atlas Wiki, yes.
Okay, because I straight up thought they had just smashed her head in with the barrel, and I was like, oh my gosh. No,
yeah, that would have been brutal. Because, I mean, that takes it from a fun bar fight to like, oh, that's a homicide. You can't just kill people.
I mean...
That changes the whole vibe.
You know, it had already happened earlier in the same plot line. So, you know... With the critic.
Yeah. And that was a brutal murder.
And
oh
it was
goodness.
So out of nowhere. It was so unexpected.
And he goes to Tom Hanks.
I thought he was just going to punch him and like start beating on him. And instead he just takes him and throws him off the building.
How are you going to end this story there, man? And he's like, oh, how am I going to? I'll show you how I end this story. Throws him off the thing, walks over to the
and
bar.
And just goes,
tequila, three
fingers.
He puts salt on his finger and just takes the shot.
Oh my gosh, that was insane.
That storyline was the most amusing one in the entire movie. Absolutely. That was my number one.
The three thugs walking in on him when he's in the bathroom and literally he's just like, you can talk to my secretary, I'm open between 11 and 2. And they're just like, no, you don't get it. He's like, come on, we like to keep it nice and comfortable between friends. It's like, oh god.
Oh boy. Well, on to the next one. So in 2144, Sunmi 451 is a fabricant, a humanoid clone indentured as a fast food server and implied sex worker in a dystopian neo-soul. She is exposed to ideas of rebellion by another fabricant, Yuna 939, who has obtained a clip of the movie about Cavendish's involuntary institutionalization.
Which is such an awesome through line, dude. Like, that's so awesome because that move, that whole sequence that we just covered is so ridiculous, and you see it from the objective lens of what did happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy's talking, he's narrating himself as this like hyperbolic, he's saying it's way cooler than it is. Yeah. And then the movie ties back as freaking Tom Hanks just demanding that he has rights and you can't treat me like this, and he storms out. It's so awesome.
Well, after Yuna is killed, Sunmi is rescued by rebel commander Haiju Chang, who exposes Sunmi to the banned writings of Alexander, can't pronounce this name, Solzhenitsyn, and the full film version of Cavendish's experience. Haiju eventually introduces her to the leader of the rebel movement and shows her that clones, when freed, are actually recycled into soap, food for fabricants.
You hear that, John? Clones. Good movie, huh? It says clones and rebellions.
Oh,
you're the worst.
It's not. It's not Tomorrow Morrison,
though. It's just a bunch of Tomorrow Morrison.
Would you like my fries, sir?
It's our job to serve the to serve the clients.
Well, Sunmi makes
more
a
soap.
She makes a public broadcast of her revelations before the authorities attack, killing Haiju and recapturing Sunmi. After recounting her story to an archivist, she is executed.
This is the only plot line in this story that made me cry.
Dude.
See, nothing made me cry, but I definitely, like, the thing was, if there hadn't been for the issue we already talked about, this probably would have been my favorite.
Yeah.
Just because this is right up my alley with like just the type of plot I love.
Yeah.
And you know, like essentially someone like discovering the world is like, you know, is not the way that she believes it to be, and therefore like leading this giant like rebellion, but she's really just like, there's nothing truly special. It's just and about like this like one person. Truth. They just picked her because like she happened to like know a little more about this one person, and like the idea that like anyone can lead a rebellion coming from that is like really cool.
Well, this is also like getting into a little bit of like a strange like territory, but I mean, essentially what Sunmi did was made herself another messiah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what
and
it
you
is.
See
yeah.
that in the next plot line, which we'll get to, yeah. But like, oh my gosh, not only was she like, did she ascend like this? This was the
incredible.
Movies don't count if they like trigger like a series, like if it's like trypophobia, you know what I mean, or something that I legitimately like can't handle, will obviously make me want to throw up because it's just like, I can't handle it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, this is the only movie that I have seen that showed me a scene that doesn't cross any like hard lines that I have, that made me actually want to throw up. When I saw the cattle farming scene.
Oh gosh.
Dude,
oh,
yeah, the revelation for me, because it's like, because they're alluding to, I don't know. And then when they hit you with just how screwed these people are getting.
Because I knew when they were like, she goes to Exaltation. And I'm like, so something worse happens when you leave, but what happens?
Yeah.
Like, and then you find out it's that, oh, their bodies essentially just get turned into food for these clones, and like that's
the strange thing is that I don't know that it was just food, because there was at one point where that one guy overdosed on it.
No, it's food that they have infused with like drugs to essentially keep them happy, like doping them up.
Okay.
So like it is definitely also possible to like OD on it, and that's why they only get one per day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was just like a milk jug, and I was like, they're just drinking like a single jug of milk. Like, this is the only time you ever see them eat. I was like, what the heck?
And because they're only like they're born and only have they have a much shorter lifespan than regular people because of the recycling process. That was the whole thing with the stars, is the longer you do this, the more stars you get. When you get all the stars, you get exalted.
Mm-hmm.
That whole process is just, it's such a brilliant lie. And it just shows like oh god, it's very anti like corporation
because oh, yeah.
it's just like this is so visceral, it man. Just such a visceral, disgusting look at what unfettered corporations just that are just allowed to do whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's where we're going. That's totally super the, where we're headed.
The most jarring moment for me was when you know you see like one of the other fabricants like you know walking in. You know, she's going to Exaltation or whatever, and she sits down like she's so happy in the so chair, happy. And they're like, yeah, you know, just relax, this is just to remove your collar, and then boom, she's dead.
Yeah.
Like, instantaneous.
It's literally cattle. I mean,
yeah. And I was just like, exactly well, yeah, because it's yeah. the, it's literally yeah. just the sheep gun, same like, thing. Right to your forehead.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I was just like, whoa. Okay. Like, as soon as that happened, I was like, did she just die? And yeah. it took me a second to realize that she was dead. Like, it took
it
me a minute.
It was so fast. It was just so quick.
I was just like, oh, did they knock her out? No, she's dead. Yeah. And I was like, whoa. Her mind just, like
and I was like, oh my gosh. And then when Sunmi, I'm not sure which number it was, but when
451.
Yeah. Another one that died outside the elevator who was trying to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When she
where you
like,
realize that the collar is not just like, you know, like a little just, you know, thing to denote who is what. Yeah. But it is actually also a, like, oh, if you step out of line, we're going to kill you.
And they built so much tension with him, like, holding, like, the mm-hmm. thing. That he's, like, looking at her, like, almost like, you know this is a mistake, right? And
yeah.
boom, and just like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So you said terrible. Her name is Sunmi 451?
Yeah, and that is significant, yeah.
Is that a Fahrenheit 451 reference?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, big money! Let's go! As soon as I heard that, I'm like, that. Whenever there are numbers in a movie or any piece of fiction, it's just a great way to hide Easter eggs.
Well, 451 was both her number as well as Luisa Rey's apartment number.
That's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
But yes, it was a reference to Fahrenheit 451.
Awesome, man. God.
So, and also, I can't skip past it, the action of that plot line with, like, Haiju just mm-hmm. being, like, the most badass fighter
awesome.
Ever. like whenever he pulled out one of those, like, swinging bombs and just threw it and it, like, blows up the entire, like, damway and they just, like, whoop into the little hatch and I was just like, dude, this guy is awesome.
Well, and I did really like the, and again, I know it's the whole point of the movie, but when it was, you know, when she was saying, we'll find each other in another life, and then it cuts to the two same actors.
Yes.
In the very first line. Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
That got me. That was the one moment in the movie that, like, kind of got me a little bit, and I was like, okay.
Which goes back to the Let Me Tell You Why episode,
mm-hmm.
where you were talking about finding Samuel in another life. And
oh,
I'm
of
like,
course.
Bro, you already did.
But
like,
we're not going to get sappy on this one. that's for a different show.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
So the last plot line, in 2321, the tribespeople of the post-apocalyptic Hawaii worship Sunmi. Their sacred text is taken from her recorded testimony, which I'm going to talk about the book that is made out of, like, the actual book of like, the whole thing of Sunmi. I'm going to talk about that in the fun facts.
Okay.
Zachary Bailey's village is visited by Marinim, a member of an advanced society called the Prescients. Prescients use nuclear-powered ships and remnants of high technology, but are dying from a plague. Marinim is searching for a forgotten communication station on Mauna Sol to send an SOS to off-world humans. In exchange for healing Zachary's niece, Katkin, Marinim is guided by Zachary to the station, where Sunmi made her recording. Returning home, Zachary finds his tribe slaughtered by the cannibalistic Kona tribe. He kills the sleeping Kona chief and rescues Katkin before he and Marinim fight off the other tribesmen. Zachary and Katkin join Marinim and the Prescients as their ship leaves Big Island. On a distant planet, Zachary is married to Marinim and recounts the story to his grandchildren.
Beautiful.
Can we talk about the fact that Tom Hanks is an absolute force of nature in this movie?
He's a force of nature
in every movie he's
he
in.
Really is.
He has been my favorite actor for like forever.
Really?
Yeah.
He's just so incredible, but this movie displays it particularly well because he just plays so many different styles and roles
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
puts on so many different faces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even, like, just, like, I didn't actually mean that with prosthetics. I meant just, like, with him.
Mm-hmm.
He just puts on so many different faces. And
yeah.
And you're just like, wow, just watching him like move through the plot lines and then how many different stories and like the fact that he, I don't know, like he probably had help and coaching in relation to it. You might have a fun fact about it, but like the accent of like the future speak that's like the next like mm-hmm. evolution of the English language.
Yeah.
He owned that accent. Nobody else like was doing an accent. He was just like doing an accent. He made up an accent for them.
Yeah.
I was just like, what is that? It's like,
and the future speak was just really cool to like develop a next progression of like the English vernacular. Like what? Who would think to do that?
Well, from what I understood, this is what I gathered, was that the Prussians speak just like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the island, because it's like a little more primitive, they have a different way of speaking that cuts out a lot of like the articles and like, you know, and has like different words for different things. But the Prussians, or at least Marinim, was taught like how to speak their language so she could go down. And she even had a little bit of an accent too that she like only threw in when she was speaking their language.
Right. Because when she was talking, when she was radioing back to that guy, when she was using that little really cool like mirror, like portal thing.
Yeah.
When she was talking to like the home base. They were talking completely normally. Mm-hmm. And then Halle Berry did a really good job of speaking in that accent like a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, she's speaking that kind of slang, but at the same time, you can tell that she's not, like, all the way in.
It doesn't sound as natural as it does when Tom Hanks does
Which
it.
Which is so...
You can tell that she learned it, like, from a book. You know what I mean? Like, versus, like, Tom Hanks, who's, like, this is his whole life.
Well, yeah.
I guess I shouldn't say Tom Hanks. That particular... role,
Zachary.
But,
yeah.
So I thought the Prussians were getting oppressed or were getting screwed over by Lambent radiation that was taking place.
Because I believe that is true. But they referred to it like because they didn't entirely know what it was, like, you know, as a plague. But then she sort of explained, like, you know, it's the same as, like, how you guys are, you know, suffering here. We're suffering from the same thing because we're from the same place.
Right.
Like, you know. Right. But I think she just referred to it as plague, mostly for Zachary's benefit because, like, that's easier to understand.
I see.
Yeah. But that was also one of my favorite plot lines, mostly just because of all of the stuff inside of Zachary's head with this Georgie character.
That was so great.
That is... one of my favorite things to be shown in, like, because in books it's so easy to do that, like, mm-hmm. to just have it, like, in their head. It is hard to convincingly put this, like, you know, oppressive, you know, devil on your shoulder in a movie and make it look good. And
not
like,
make it look cringe.
Right, and they did such a good job of, like, taking this... like, you know, character and making it really creepy whenever it appears and, like, you know, getting in his ear and just saying these, like, horrible things that rile him up and get him, like, angry and upset and, you know, all these things. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, you know, that was the reason that I loved flipping back to that one is I was like, where's Georgie? Where are he at? He's coming back, right?
That's awesome. He was actually one of the things that suggested to me upon, like, further rewatch that it was radiation that was doing it because... I'm almost positive, I could be wrong, but I'm almost positive that hallucinations are a symptom of acute radiation poisoning.
Really?
It's mm-hmm. I mean, it's possible.
And,
I don't know.
And he's not the only one that saw old Georgie.
No, like the abbess would, like, talk to him about, like, ooh, Georgie's coming for you, like, all that stuff. Which led me to believe that, like, Sonmi and Georgie were, like, their two,
the God and the devil,
essentially. Mm-hmm.
Just the concept that Sonmi's revolution that changed the fabric of society in that place that we didn't even get to see. We just saw what happened afterwards, right? That all of that knowledge was lost to these more primitive individuals who live in the same shared dilapidated space. And just off of the context around Sonmi, they're just like, yeah, she's a deity.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Like, the whole through line about this entire movie is not even about religion, because it's not, like, because they talk about reincarnation a lot, but it's the pursuit of knowledge and knowledge being the greatest form of liberation,
mm-hmm.
right? The more you know, the more righteous you are. because the more you're able to make the decisions for yourself, the more you're able to reclaim your own freedom through knowledge.
Yeah.
That's why the whole Halle Berry thing was about finding those documents, is because they know what's going on, but through that knowledge and exposing that knowledge and sharing it with the rest of the world, now we can act. Now
oh,
we can
that
do
was
things.
That was like arguably my favorite line in the movie, was when he was like, well, you know, like, you know, what if nobody believes you? And she's like, somebody already does.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was just like, oh, that's so good. Because like that fear was immediately instilled in him of like, if even one person believes her, then like,
well,
then they can
I thought
start.
I thought he was the believer.
Yeah. I thought he was the believer.
Well,
I'm talking about him.
Well, I didn't even like catch that. I saw it as her saying, somebody already does, at, like out there, one person. If one person believes me, then it doesn't matter if I go, because now it like the knowledge is out there, the belief is out there, and like this will keep going.
Yeah,
I saw it as being that he was that believer.
It's probably
just,
both.
Yeah,
I mean, like she probably like well, because both ways like would be synonymous, because
it's the same thing. Because now that it's in his head, like if he actually believes her and this is in his head, then like
yeah,
you know, like how is he going to continue doing what he's supposed to do now?
Also, this movie is just a treasure trove of awesome quotes.
Oh, yeah.
This movie has everything, man. A half-read book is a half-finished love affair.
I
will not be subject to criminal abuse. Our lives are not our own. We are bound to others, past and present. And by each crime and every kindness, we birth our future. Come on, man. That's... This is just crack for me, dude. Give me more crack.
Well, that was Cloud Atlas, guys. So
it feels so strange because every story has its own like independent ending that like it just feels as intended. It feels like there's so much more.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like because it like it implies bigger generations ahead that like we don't get to see, but it's. It's cool. It's very cool.
Yep.
The message is so poignant and strongly delivered that, like, I hate the cosmetic stuff.
I know.
Yeah.
The message is so poignant and strongly delivered and so powerfully delivered. I mean, everyone does a great job in this movie. Every actor does a great job. But it's
for sure.
Just with the prosthetics, man.
I know. It was rough.
Yeah, it's fine.
But what would you guys rename this movie if it wasn't Cloud Atlas?
I mean, it would have to be one of the other titles of one of the other works. You know, like it would have to be like the guy who got trapped in the retirement home.
Was like a long one. It was like the something. It was like the
like
something
the
something
adventures
of Timothy
yeah.
Cavendish.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well, maybe not that one.
Knuckle sandwich.
Yeah, it's knuckle sandwich.
No.
Maybe well, just humanity.
Well, for me, I was gonna go with either Not Our Own or Doors. Because, like, so often transitions...
Doors are just wooden portals.
Because so often transitions happen when literally just, like, someone goes to open a door and a different character from a different time opens it.
Yeah.
So I would either call it Doors or Not Our Own.
John?
I would call it The Butterfly Effect.
Wait, there's already a movie called The Butterfly Effect.
Which I do think we need to put in the hat, because that movie rocks.
Are we having another Point Break thing? You just named this movie another movie.
Is there a movie?
I actually didn't know that.
I've never heard of.
I've never heard of The Butterfly Effect. The movie.
I didn't either.
Never heard of that movie.
There's definitely.
Nope.
You know,
of course,
I'm not
of
crazy.
Course.
It's another rated R movie called The Butterfly Effect.
Yeah, it has what's his name from that 70s show.
Yeah,
Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, it was Ashton Kutcher.
I had no idea that was a thing.
Yes, it's a pretty like famous movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
I thought it was clever.
Fair enough.
It might be a little cringe and on the nose, but I would call it The Ties That Bind.
Okay.
Oh, this is tough. I mean, just because, like, the Somni thing was so, so awesome, I feel like it's got to be something like the Legacy of Somni or something like that. Or maybe just call it Somni. There you go.
Actually, I'm going to call it, I'm going to change my answer to Be New. And I will say why I am calling it that when we get to the fun facts.
Okay.
So I went on Amazon. The general consensus is okay. 67% rated it 5 stars. Do y'all want positive or negative first?
Negative. I'd like to leave on a positive note if that's all right.
Okay. So do you want to hear from, so both of these are reviews from 2021. Do you want to hear from M. Burgeon or Nicholas?
We got it. The M. Burgeon is in the house.
M. Bison, I love him.
Okay. Yeah, rated it 1 star, and it's titled, I really wanted to like it, but...
Then just like it.
I like the subject of reincarnation, but I couldn't make it through 15 minutes. Stilted dialogue, boring plot, a bit like the sci-fi show Dollhouse, but much worse. I'm a fan of slow-moving movies, but only when they're actually going somewhere. I like most of the actors in this, but this wasn't their best work or their fault. The makeup was a bit fake-looking as well. I ended up not caring and turning it off. 1 star.
What an idiot.
That's not fair. Can you read the other one? Because I only watched 15 minutes of it.
Yeah.
So this one,
watch the movie.
Yeah. This one, is someone getting a little, up in arms. Not even about like the racial stuff.
Oh, okay.
This movie is so far from what the, well, sorry, it's titled Disgusting and Distasteful. This movie is so far from what the trailer and description portrayed. It included cult sexual behavior for the future story, and I was so uncomfortable I had to turn it off. There are women out there who are so traumatized mentally and emotionally from cult abuse and brainwashing. I would never spend money on this movie had I known what it contained. Why do people find such dark subject matters entertaining? Is there not enough warped and whack trash in the world already? I'll be sticking to movies that are interesting without the human rights abuse and constant nasty characters. 1 star.
It was what they overcame.
She was a really big fan of the Pinocchio movie.
This was a person named Nicholas.
Come on, Tibble. So.
He was a really big fan of the Pinocchio movie.
It's what they... Okay, when people go up in arms about a movie that has really, really nasty themes, it's like going to Django Unchained, which is just an amazing revenge fantasy that deals in the one of the worst aspects of one of, if not the worst aspects in American culture, and just shoots it in the head multiple times with a revolver and in an awesome, awesome way. And they're like, slavery was bad. Why are you making a movie about it? And it's like, you're missing the point, dude.
Well, also, I think there is something to be said, and like, you know, I might even seem a little hypocritical with this, but I think there is something to be said to have represented like real, like dark struggles that happen in the world and like watch somebody either overcome it as they did in this, or even just like bringing it to light and kind of shoving it in people's faces and being like, hey, you don't get to forget about this because this is a real thing. You know, and like, I don't necessarily I'm not on board with necessarily forcing someone to like, you know, watch something super graphic and shoving it in your face, but like having it like, you know, at least at least implied, or like, you know, you see like a bit or a piece and like you get the picture and you're like, okay, like I think there is importance to that, where like people need to not constantly be able to hide from terrible things in the world.
You need to be moving pretty quick.
I know minutes. So this is the positive review I found. It is from a user that's just called Observant, and it's titled Sublime But Not For Everyone. One of the best movies of all time, but for a specific type of audience. This is not the movie for you if you're someone who is more into linear plots with a typical sequence. It is for an audience who doesn't get bored and finds things that are different and out of the typical linear sequence interesting. It does have a sequence, and what a sequence, but not delivered in the more typical Hollywood manner. For the types who expect a movie to be short and to the point, and who aren't curious or interested in the topic of reincarnation, don't bother even watching it for free. The main topic has to do with incarnation and human nature. It is touching, magical, sublime, and inspiring. Love this movie, had to buy it, and share it with other weirdos like my wife and I. 5 stars.
And who wrote that?
This was Observant in 2017.
I'm going to get a poster of you on my wall. That was very well said, and I agree with everything.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it is not.
Which is why I wanted to show it to you guys, because it, you know, it's easy to say like, oh, hey, here's an objectively good thing. Let's all appreciate it together. I picked this one specifically because I got a lot out of this, but I understand based on... which I don't know the percentage. I didn't do any of the research into the reviews, but I remember knowing that this got very middle of the road reviews. You either kind of, it's very polarizing, also, and so I wanted to get your guys' take on whether you either had the same experience or were turned off by aspects of it. And I'm glad that I got to share it with you, because this is a really special movie for me.
Well, what do y'all think this is rated critically out of 100 on Rotten Tomatoes?
I think it's low. I think it's like
I'm going to guess like 63%.
Okay.
I was going to say 57.
Okay.
60. Would you say 57? 60. I'll say 60. Oh,
let's go with. Okay. Let's go with the horse method. How many plot lines are in the story?
I think.
Six? Yeah, there's six.
I think six.
Six? So then what? Like six times five?
Okay.
So 20.
What?
That's 30.
What are you talking about?
Six times five. 20. Which is 60.
What?
Plus seven. Because we got to do. He's right. It's there's six. Five of us plus six five. Plot. Six plot lines times five because there's five of us. So that's 30 times two always, which is 60. Plus six because there's six plot lines in it. My number's 66.
Okay.
I've got to go. Do some stuff for Sam Marie. So, Samuel out.
Okay. Bye, everyone. What was your out of 10 rating for it before you leave?
Like a 7.5 out of 10.
7.5? Okay.
Awesome.
All right. And John, what's your guess?
50.
So 50, you said 57, you said 66? Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. It's 66.
The method is unbreakable! It's not even a method. You're just like making it up as you go. I hate this meme and I hate that it works every time.
Every time!
It's so dumb.
I wasn't even going to. I didn't think of anything crackhead for it, but you inspired me.
Well, that's the funny part is like, as you were saying it, I was doing that method in my head and that was actually going to be my guess, but then he took it. So I'm like, I'm not going to sit there and look like a copycat to this dude. So I was like, you know what? Middle of the road. Oh my 50. God. And now I'm upset because I would have been right.
Stupid method never fails.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, audience score out of 100.
I think the audience score is a little bit. I think it might be a little bit lower, actually. I'm going to say a 63.
Okay. Audience.
71.
Okay.
50.
Russell, you're the closest this time because it was the exact same number, 66.
Really?
The exact same number.
Well, I'll be.
That's bizarre. Yep.
Shucks.
And now IMDb out of 10.
7.1.
Okay.
I'm going to say 7.0.
Okay.
5.9.
5.9.
So, I'm sorry, repeat you guys's.
7.0.
7.1.
It's going to be Tyler because it was 7.4. So it's a little bit higher. Nice. Just a little bit.
Take those.
So the budget for this movie is kind of disputed. Here's what I know for sure. It flopped. It only made out of its, you know, over $100 million budget. It earned $9.6 million. And the box office total earnings were $130.5. So if you want to do that math, then you'll figure out what the budget was. But I didn't have the energy to do that. But yeah, it did not make very much. And it was because everyone except like the actual, you know, three filmmakers were like, audiences are not going to be able to get this. Like, it's too much. This isn't going to succeed. And the filmmakers were like, yes, it is. And then they were wrong. Everyone else was right. The audiences, they average like less than, I think, like $5,000 per theater on the first weekend. Oh. It was really, really rough.
That's heartbreaking.
Because it flopped so hard, they didn't win any big awards. They were nominated and won lots of smaller awards, but no Academy Awards and nothing like that.
It's so disheartening because it's like, then why even make art? Like I've said multiple times about like the really, really great artistic directors who make movies that just don't get people.
Yeah.
They just don't pull an audience. Right? Any Wes Anderson, any, the guy who did Baby Driver, friggin'
Edgar Wright. Oh, I love Baby Driver.
Edgar Wright, Wes Anderson, these types of creatives who just make poignant pieces or just pieces of art.
Mm-hmm.
People just sleep on these movies because they don't want to appreciate, I don't know. Stupid.
Well, I'm going to power through because we got to leave soon. So here are some fun facts I pulled. Mm. So this is one of the few movies of his own that Tom Hanks likes to rewatch.
That's awesome.
It's also one of the few films in history that has three directors working together as an original team that all equally share the directing credit.
Wow.
Cool. The cover of the book, The Revelation of Son Mi 451. So it is made from interwoven fabricant collars. Its pages are made from their clothes, and the words are stitched from strands of their hair.
What?
Hold on. Yeah.
The revelation of what?
Of Sonmi 451. I'm going to keep going while you look for that.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, because of the nature of casting on the film, the directors told the actors to think of their roles as a genetic strain rather than a series of individual parts, with actions in one storyline affecting another.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was more like they were like, I'm essentially casting you as like, you know, a piece of DNA that gets passed between all of your characters.
That's a really good way to put it.
So this is the reason why I would, call the movie Be New. The large Korean letters on the rejuvenation drink boxes drunk by Somni 451 and the fabricants read Be New when translated into English. And the actual like characters that are pronounced B and New, B-I and spelled B-I and N-U, translates to soap. So that's how they were able, that's like why they were able to like essentially fool everybody.
Wow.
And the number, we already talked about that, but if y'all didn't know, 451 denotes a temperature needed to burn books. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who didn't know, a cloud atlas is a real thing. It is a collection of images of clouds showing all the different types which occur in the atmosphere and their various names. Louisa Ray's parents, Lester and Judith Ray, appear to be a tip of the hat to science fiction publishing greats Lester Del Rey and Judy Lynn Del Rey.
Huh.
Both Ian McKellen and James McAvoy were offered roles, but they were not, I guess they didn't accept.
James McAvoy would have been really, really, really good in this movie.
And this is essentially, I'm just going to name off, these are the six main characters who each had the comet-shaped birthmark. Adam Ewing, mm-hmm. Robert Frobisher, Louisa Ray, Timothy Cavendish, Sonmi 451, and Zachary. Yeah, and that is all the fun facts that I had, because all the other ones were stuff that, like, we already caught, and so I was just like, I'm not going to throw that out there.
Small fun fact, in the original book, the shooting star birthmark represented the same character, or the same genetic bloodline, if you will, the same spirit being passed on and on and on. Mm. So instead, but the filmmakers wanted to go in a different direction and just show different iterations of different aspects of spirit,
mm-hmm.
kind of shape, taking different shapes, which is why they did different actors with the birthmark, which I thought was really cool.
Well, who do we think we would cast each other as? This is a hard one.
This is very hard.
So are we casting as like the actors that repeat? In the
fifth piece.
are we casting as like the recurring like actor, or are we casting as the individual character?
I think the way to do it would be the recurring actor.
Yeah, okay. Like because
there's
a lot.
So many characters.
There's a lot.
Yeah. Part of me wants to put
Russell as Sixsmith.
I could actually see that. Yeah, that actor? You playing that actor, the character that plays Sixsmith.
Yeah. Cool.
I was gonna. I don't know.
I can see that.
Debating between, I don't know, I kind of want to see you as Hugo Weaving. Either you or John as Hugo Weaving.
I want to see John as Hugo Weaving.
Yeah.
I was putting you as either Sixsmith or Frobisher. One of those two.
Oh.
Yeah.
As who?
I put him as either Sixsmith or Frobisher.
Yeah, either of those would work really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
I hit this.
I feel like you'd enjoy Halle Berry's role.
I would. I want to put you as Adam Ewing. As that actor.
Yeah.
And Samuel gets Tom Hanks.
Samuel Tom Hanks.
Done.
Is the actor who played Adam Ewing the same actor who played
Haiju Chang?
Haiju Chang.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We take those action sequences.
That's part of the reason why I did it.
Not supposed to do it.
We'll take those.
So now that we have our new rules for the drinking game, we have to come up with something.
Every time.
I had a pretty good one.
Okay.
Every time someone dies, you finish a drink.
Ooh, okay. I think that's good.
Yeah.
Every time it changes to a different thread.
Storyline.
You have to just take a drink.
Just take a drink. Nothing crazy. Yeah. Just take a drink.
You'd still get very drunk.
Oh, yeah.
You take a shot every time the birthmark is shown.
Ooh.
Take a shot every time the birthmark is shown?
Well, it's not...
It's not...
It's
not
six
times.
Over 3 hours.
That's two point. Shots an hour.
We take those. Yeah. No,
on
we
top
take
of
those.
Drinking and
yes.
We're gonna be blasted. We're not gonna be able to focus on this movie.
I would really like to rewatch this movie with that.
Oh God!
I'd love to rewatch this movie.
We will not be able to do that. That is too many shots.
We'll say half a shot. Half a shot every time you see the birthmark. Okay,
that feels better.
Okay, half a shot every time you see the birthmark.
I mean, that was it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's three rules.
Oh, well, there you go.
You won't need more than that.
No, you don't need any more.
If you had any more, it would just blackout.
Every time someone dies, you finish a drink for sure.
All right, let's...
Oh my God, no, because in the beginning when you see Zachary and the dad and the son get killed, it's two drinks that you're two in the cup.
Yep, there you go.
It doesn't matter. Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Let's get trash. Okay, cool.
We got to power through. So, so as fast as you can, favorite and least favorite moments.
Oh, goodness gracious.
My favorite is pussy on the document paper.
that was so funny.
And least favorite is the man fake ejaculating onto the back of the waitress.
Oh yeah, that was not good. Yeah. I did not enjoy that.
Yeah, definitely the abuse to all of the replicants was probably the hardest to watch for me. My favorite, man. Shoot, come back to me on the favorite.
Okay.
My least favorite scene, I just had it and I lost it. My favorite scene is the whole thing with somebody's revelation.
Mm-hmm.
That is the best. And then my least favorite scene is probably, God, why? I literally just had it, bro. But I felt the pressure. I felt the pressure trying to say it fast. Now I'm taking longer. Whatever, it's fine.
Okay, I'll say mine. So my least favorite was the really gross scene with Papa Song, like, sucking on her foot while he's banging her. That was really gross. I hated that. Really disgusting. And then my favorite is, I mean, it's either the action in all of This on Me, like, storyline, because it was just so awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm specifically trying to pick different stuff because from like, you know, different people. Or it is just all of the Frobisher storyline.
Yeah,
the Frobisher. I was just so obsessed with the Frobisher storyline.
I'll tell you what, it's less of a moment and more of a collection of moments. Every time one plot line references back or is connected to one of the other ones. So when somebody, you know, when Halle Berry finds the Cloud Atlas, right?
Yeah.
Or when they're reading, you know, Mr. Ewing's journal. Or things like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, small things like Vaya or whatever the guy's name was. The
Vivian.
Vivian. When Vivian was having had a dream about the future and heard the Cloud Atlas, which his composer guy was already writing. Like, what? Ugh, so good. Okay.
My least favorite moment was the horrible scene where the makeup and prosthetics on the actor who played Somni. When she was Hispanic was so bad.
That was real bad.
That was not ideal.
That was
terrible.
Atrocious.
Yeah.
I almost couldn't even look at it. Like, it looked like...
Oh, yeah, sorry. Other least favorite moment was Hugo Weaving shooting the dog.
Oh.
That was not cool.
That was rough.
That was not cool.
Anyway.
Hugo Weaving.
Let's say out of 10 shooting star birthmarks, what would you rate Cloud Atlas?
10. 1,000% of 10. This is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I'm going to give it an 8.5. I'm going to give it an 8.5 because the prosthetics just take enough away that I don't like it as much as I like to.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 8 comet birthmarks because, I don't know, I loved that style of storytelling. It was very interesting, definitely engaging, and it had so many funny moments. I'm a sucker for comedies, and this just had so many great one-liners that it was just hard not to love. But again, I docked points because of the terrible, horrible prosthetics and makeup choices.
Yeah, I'm going to rate it, like I said, this is one of my favorite types of just art in general. And so I'm going to put it at 9 birthmarks out of 10. Because I'm going to take off 1 for just all of that confusing, like, everything. And for killing the dog, because that was just not necessary. So, like, for those things, I dock 1, you know, 1 point. But other than that, like, you know, I really enjoyed it. Even stuff that, like, you know, even stuff that like made me uncomfortable, I understood the purpose enough to where I was able to like kind of like power through it and be like, okay, I get it though. Yeah. Like, I wish I wasn't watching it, but I understand it, you know? And it was kind of one of those things. But yeah, we don't have time for any last thoughts. Sorry.
We could watch it.
Yeah, yes.
Please watch it.
It is not for everybody. And maybe don't watch this if you have boisterous friends that are going to talk through it, because this will confuse you. you know, just like passive aggressiveness, just a little bit.
It's
all
happens.
It's all happens. But keep it in. No, you gotta let it out. but yeah, if you want to like, honestly, this is something you should either like watch by yourself or watch with like a close friend that like that you know y'all can. If you need to discuss as you go, or like you have a question that like you may not catch on to, you know, do that. But this is not a party movie. Don't do this as like, hey, I'm going to invite all my friends over and we're going to watch Cloud Atlas, because that'll be a bad time. don't do that. But yeah, so.
I enjoy Russell's company.
Okay, then. I'm happy for you, too. So just a reminder, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment, or on Twitter at @artists_mad. We just finished casting for our next production of Arsenic and Old Lace. Russell sitting here is our director.
Hello,
me, I'm the director. Samuel is going to be his assistant director. And then Tyler, John, and myself are all going to be appearing in the show. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're starting rehearsals next week. You'll be able to see a ton about it on all of our social media, so just keep an eye out. Be sure to listen in to Call of the Netherdeep every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Twitch at Mad Artists Co.
It's so good.
If you don't want to watch it live, you can watch it after the fact on our YouTube channel. Just search Mad Artists Entertainment, or you can listen to it as a podcast under the name Dicebox, just like Bannerbox. Next week, we are going to be watching a childhood favorite of mine, which is The Never Ending Story. So for anyone who has seen it or just thinks it's crazy, definitely tune in, because we're excited for it. And if you have any thoughts that you want to send our way before we record, we would love to read them on the show. And we will be seeing you guys next week. Leave us a review wherever you're listening, and thank you guys so much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.